my distillation of life is that some suffering is absolutely earned. We make bad choices and those consequences follow us. But then there's this other category of it's unearned suffering. And there's a lot of people that are absolutely ashamed of the unearned suffering that they've experienced in their life. And I want to communicate through an aesthetic that is gritty and dirty, because I see myself in that aesthetic. I see myself in that kind of life. And yet I feel the love of God penetrating my life all of the time. That's why I think it is such a waste of time to walk around with this pious religious attitude that doesn't serve anybody. It's not useful. It's not utilitarian in the slightest. It only shores us up in our insecurities. It never brings us to freedom.
You actually have to believe in something that makes you look like an idiot.
We all have strengths and we all have struggles.
Of course I love you. And Jay just looked at me and said, not the real me.
Held in a dungeon for 165 days, not knowing when we were going to be set free.
God remains present in all of it.
Legitimately suffering.
Focus on living. Don't focus on not being sick.
There really is blessedness in brokenness.
This is A Broken Hallelujah. All right, this is episode 11, my people, and we have a new jingle. What do you think? New intro. Was getting a bit tired of the old one, and we're on episode 11, so I figure let's change things up. Let's make it uncomfortable, throw something new in there. So you'll either love it or hate it. Either way, it's here to stay for a while. So welcome to A Broken Hallelujah. We're glad you're with us. If you're joining for the first time, that jingle was the first thing you've ever heard, and there you go. But if you're returning, we're glad that you're back. We celebrated our 10th anniversary episode last week, or 2 weeks ago, with Chelsea Wong and her kind of experience and journey with her husband and his two-year battle with cancer. If you didn't hear that episode, highly recommend jumping back and having a listen. So grateful still to Chelsea for being with us and for sharing a journey that's still very raw for her. And I think that's one of the great things of this podcast, is to kind of hear those raw stories and kind of draw on that. And in many ways, the guest that I have on for our 11th episode is very much like that himself. His name's Andy Squires. He's a pastor of a church in Charlotte, North Carolina, but perhaps more significant for this podcast, he's a singer-songwriter, a musician who's released a number of albums. In my opinion, if I was to think of an artist who would be like the soundtrack to A Broken Hallelujah, it would be Andy. His music is hauntingly beautiful. It is deeply challenging. It's music from a faith perspective, and yet it wrestles with the hardest kind of reflections on faith that we have, between suffering and pain and hardship, and how do we keep an active and kind of honest relationship with God through that. He's writing music that is not necessarily for the Christian mainstream, which is another thing that I love about it. And it's music that enables an expression for a narrative of life that often Christian music doesn't bring an expression to. And I think that is also super important, and one of the reasons why I've always loved Andy's music, why I wanted to get him on the show. And he and I talk about the present state of Christian music. We talk about why he's drawn to write the way he does. We talk about an experience that he and his church had a number of years ago, where a friend of his was murdered. And how that led to him writing his first record, Cherry Blossoms, and that journey is an incredible journey. We talk about his recent record, which is called Poet Priest, and the way that Andy brings expression to pain and vulnerability in that record. Throughout our conversation, I include excerpts from Andy's music, and just to give you a little bit of a taste of kind of his songwriting style, but particularly his lyrics. I want to encourage you that when those little clips of Andy's music comes in, to have a listen, and just keep your ear out for the lyrics, and I think they'll be challenging and surprising, but also poetic in how he strings concepts and metaphors together. And then right at the end of the podcast, I'm going to play one whole track off his record. It's my favorite track, and I think you'll enjoy that a lot, and worth sticking around to the end of the podcast just to hear that whole song. But I don't want to spend too much time introducing him. I want you to hear his story and get straight into his music. So we're actually going to start with the opening track of his recent record, Poet Priest. Just a little excerpt of that track to give you a flavor of Andy's music, and then we'll go straight into his interview. So this is my conversation and the music of Andy Squires.
I'd give you my dream, but I lost it down in the locust years. Still praise is the song that I'm singing, even though sorrow's my tune. Oh, my love is only a whisper now, but nothing is wasted with you.
Well, hey, Andy, it's so great to have you join us here for A Broken Hallelujah. Thanks for taking the time to be with us today.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
So why don't we just start by you maybe introducing yourself, telling us a little bit about who you are and your background, where you live, what you do. Just help people who are listening, I guess, get connected to you as a person.
Yeah, well, I currently live in the city of Charlotte, North Carolina. My wife and I have been here since 1999, so I guess going on 22 years now. And we moved out here kind of just on a wing and a prayer, land of opportunity. I'm originally from California, so I was born and raised in a little town called Santa Cruz, California. But I grew up in the church there. My mom and my stepdad were part of a little Pentecostal church there, and I cut my teeth there spiritually, musically, you know, and then eventually got married in my early 20s. And yeah, we moved to North Carolina because we, in some ways, just kind of got priced out of California. And North Carolina kind of represents the land of opportunity for us. So
you're pastoring in a church there, I believe. Obviously, you're very involved with the music side. Tell us a little bit about kind of the role you've got and kind of your heart with that, and I guess how that then kind of connects to your heart for music and songwriting.
Yeah. So I always. I mean, from a very early age, felt some sense of calling to, I don't know if it was necessarily the ministry, but definitely to music. But I did a lot of praise and worship. Like, I led a lot of music in the church.
Right.
And so that definitely, I guess I fell into that. And then in a way that formed me, and I started writing songs. I guess I was around 18 years old. I couldn't even play guitar. I had a friend who had heard some of my poetry and said, "Hey, why don't we write some songs?" And I had never even thought about that before, but that was like my journey into songwriting. And then eventually ended up in full-time vocational ministry, somewhere like in my early 30s, maybe mid 30s, and right. have been doing that ever since. And then out of that, the artist side has grown as I kind of pushed out into the greater depths of my songwriting. As I got better as a songwriter, I kind of I haven't left the church behind, but I've got this other piece of music that I do that's not necessarily located directly on a Sunday morning service or even in a, like a Christian concert situation for that matter. So.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm really looking forward to sort of exploring, you know, that side of your music in a moment. Before we get there, there's a bunch of people that will listen to this podcast out here in Asia who are pastors or at least kind of deeply connected into church. And I'm just curious to kind of like get your thoughts on the church in the US right now. And, you know, obviously there's been some major things that have been taking place in the last year and a half. What do you see as some of the major challenges that are kind of at the footstep of the church in the US in this time?
Well, for me, because of what I do, and this will sound strange to some of your listeners who have no idea who I am or what I do, but what I do artistically sits a little bit outside of the contemporary Christian format.
Right.
And so the reason why that is true is because it's who I am. I feel like I'm always apologizing for some kind of critique that I'm making, but it's actually what I feel called to. And mm-hmm. when I do look at the American church, I see such a reluctance to taking risks. I see a reluctance to saying something new or saying something interesting. It's almost like this. To paint broadly for one second, if the evangelical church had an aesthetic, which it does, mm-hmm. I would say that thing has formatted already. And it is hardwired into the system, and very rarely do you see anyone breaking out of that. And that aesthetic actually leads us, and we don't even know it. And yeah. and so for me, I believe that in order for I'll use the word revival, mm-hmm. in order for revival, which to me is kind of like a re-coming alive, like some type of renaissance breaking forth in people's hearts and minds and lives.
Yeah.
There's going to have to be a new idea. There's going to have to be people who jettison the evangelical aesthetic, but stay firmly rooted in Christ.
Right. Right.
And that's hard to do, because a lot of people mistake God for culture and culture for God. God is God. Culture is not God. And a lot of times our culture is screaming at us and we think it's God. And so often it's not.
What's a liar gonna do? Finally try to tell the truth. Like foil inside my ragged tooth. Like a wasp inside my mouth.
And that is kind of a nice little segue to, I guess, the heart of what I want to be talking about together with you today, which is really more around your songwriting and the artistic expression of faith that you bring through your music that you're kind of writing and recording and putting out on albums. Yeah. And, you know, the thing that I think's drawn me to your music the most over the last number of years is really just the way that you approach your lyrics and the way you write so honestly, and I think bring expression to elements of life that we don't usually talk about in church. And obviously it's all done from within this kind of faith context, which I think is really powerful. But your songs are bringing expression to issues, brokenness, vulnerability, pain, loss, heartache, that again, we don't normally sing about in our pews. And I think that's incredibly exciting about your music. And it was interesting you mentioned earlier that, you know, you had this poetry background perhaps before you picked up a guitar and started to connect to music in that way. And I think that poetry background obviously shines forth in your songwriting a lot still today. Talk me through a little bit about like your approach to that. Like, I'm assuming that's an intentional songwriting style, or you might be like, well, no, it's just natural and it's just who I am. But there is something quite intentional, it feels, to your songs and the expression you're bringing. So open that up for us a little bit. Why is that important to you?
Well, I have a high regard for good art. And so I'm always trying to make high art, not low art. I am trying to constantly be writing masterpieces. I set out to do that. And I can't stand lazy songwriting. I confess it. I judge it when I see it. I judge it when I hear it. You know? And this is what I believe, is that we are people of story. Even when we come to faith, I didn't come to faith and agree to a whole bunch of doctrines, you know, theological statements that I gave mental assent to. I heard a captivating story, and for some reason, Westerners especially love having their ducks in a row, and they but they only love that on the surface. What they really love is a good story. That's why Hollywood does so well. That's right. Why. The poetry is there in my songs, but what I'm really trying to do is tell an honest story.
Yeah.
Because I believe that people, if they can see themselves in my story, there's something so powerful and magical and grace-filled about hearing somebody else sing the truth about a life that they actually know. And it's somehow that truth is like a conduit of grace.
Yeah, I don't know. Totally.
I don't know how to explain it, but that's just how it works. So that's why I've given myself to that. I spent a few years trying to write praise and worship music, and I think I did okay with it. You know, I got a couple albums under my belt where I set out to, you know, me and my producer, we were like, hey, let's make a Chris Tomlin album. Let's make an album of 10 songs that Chris Tomlin would sing, you know? And it's like,
right.
Okay, yeah, that's cool. Like, maybe you can make a little money at that, or maybe you can get some gigs playing at somebody's church or youth group or whatever. And it's like, that's fine. I mean, but what I'm seeing now is that the market is actually flooded with people that are doing that. I mean, I'm talking thousands and thousands and thousands of people that are doing the exact same thing over and over. And I desire to be moved in my heart, and I desire to move other people in their heart. And if I can do that by telling a truthful story in a masterful way, that's what I want to do.
Here is my secret miscarriage. My public divorce. Nobody taught me to let go, so I learned how to beat a dead horse.
For me, when I listen to your music, I feel like I'm in a therapy session. So I feel like I think people are looking for, a lot of people are carrying a lot of pain, a lot of hurt, a lot of confusion, a lot of anger. Because of so much that's happening in the world right now.
Yeah.
And in my city, that's just magnified, your context, I'm sure, too, in its own way. And we're all carrying this stuff. And I think like the triumphalistic kind of worship music type thing doesn't always create language that's accessible to help me to process my pain. And instead, what it seems to do is slap a bit of a bumper sticker on that pain, or at least, you know, the pain's the elephant in the room, and let's not talk about that, but let's talk about something else. I think what your music is doing is enabling people to find expression to what's going on emotionally in them, And I feel like enabling them to release that. And I think that's the power of the kind of music you're writing and other artists like you that are writing this kind of music. Now, talk to me a little bit about Cherry Blossoms. That was the first record, at least the first record I was introduced into your art. And I read somewhere that that was written off the back of a friend of yours who was murdered. And that record kind of came out of this kind of place, obviously, of great grief, of you trying to wrestle, I guess, with that, wrestle with your faith in that. Can you tell us a little bit about that journey and the record and how it came together?
Yes. So probably around 2007 or 2008, I started having a move in my theology. I was going away from just to give context. I was in a charismatic church, and I had always been in a charismatic Pentecostal church. And I think in the charismatic church, there's an emphasis on the heavenly realm. And we were always talking about the presence of God coming into our services, or we were always talking about outpouring of the Holy Spirit. And I think I still value and love those things, still believe in those types of encounters. But I began to shift towards a more sacramental view of the world, in that God was just as much present when I'm sitting at my desk, my computer on a Zoom call, as he is when I'm at the church and the worship band's going really hot. That sounds very simple, but it was a major shift for me. And so what I didn't know was that was really going to end up helping me. But because in 2009, this friend of ours was in his bed one evening with his wife, and they had a little baby sleeping in between them. And somebody came into the room and fired five bullets into the man. He died. Wow. The intruder left. The rest of the family was spared. But that sent our church into, I mean, we just spun out. Like, we just spun out. We were, for a year after that, we were just on our faces every Sunday. And all of the things that we held up as being sacred, we no longer really held them as being sacred anymore. Like, yeah, I mean, things got very earthy. We stopped playing games with each other. Like, when you go through something like that, it's you know, you get into these modes where you go into church and you see somebody and you say, "Hey, how's it going?"
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Fine. Like, there's no actually meeting of hearts, right?
Right.
It was like this forced lamentation, this forced corporate lamentation or laments. And we found the presence of God in that thing in the middle of the, like, darkest night of our souls. We couldn't even do anything special. I mean, his name was Matt Stewart. Matt was murdered on a Monday. We buried him on a Friday. I led worship on a Sunday, and his widow has to be carried into the service, and we do nothing but sing that hymn, "When peace like a river attendeth my way, when sorrow like sea billows roll, whatever my lot, thou hast taught me to say, it is well with my soul." I think we just stumbled through that song for 45 minutes, like, just sobbing, convulsing, crying, lifting our hands, you know, just calling out to God, you know, corporate calling out. That moment, that event, was the impetus of me writing the bulk of the songs on that record. And I mean, the proof is in the pudding. I mean, it's a masterpiece, and it it still stands today. And it's like, I think that, you know, I still get emails from people who are still discovering it. And it's so funny how so often it's finding somebody in a place where their church doesn't really have the language for them to process what they're going through.
Yeah, exactly.
And so that record does that. And so, you know, you never would want to go through something like that, and you would never wish it on anybody, but, in the universality of pain in the world, occasionally we go through things like this. And, I'm just so thankful that this experience hasn't been wasted in our lives.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's what, for me, draws me to music. It's a place of healing. You know, it like you were saying about the storytelling, it enables us to bring our stories into it and find that place of healing. How did that impact your approach to the latest record, which is called Poet and Poet Priest? You know, it's quite a few years from Cherry Blossoms to Poet Priest. And I'm sure there's a whole, So I'm sure there's a whole bunch of reasons for that. But how did you approach this album? Because it feels to me like this album carries on in a very similar vein. I think there's the way you approach your lyrics, the way you approach the songwriting, the fact that it's not necessarily sing-alongable all the time. There are moments in the album that, to be honest, are quite uncomfortable to sit in, which I think is a beautiful thing. What was your kind of thinking going through songwriting for Poet Priest? Is it something that's been on the works for a long time, or
I started writing Poet Priest in 2016, and we actually, funny enough, started recording it in 2018. So 3 years after Cherry Blossoms came out, I started recording Poet Priest. But I mean, this is a whole nother story. The process of recording that record was just very, very difficult. And my plan is not to repeat that experience, but my wife and I are both in our 40s, and I think in some ways we lost the plot for a while. We had all these dreams early on in our lives and real expectations of what life would look like and what it should be. And probably a good portion of those dreams, the exact opposite happened. And I think that when you hit middle age, you have to, in a sense, do a reassessment. You kind of have to regroup and reorganize.
Right. Yeah.
And that's what Poet Priest is to me. It's really a,
it's your midlife crisis album.
It is. Yeah. In a sense that's true, because I'm dealing with God, but I'm really dealing with myself.
Right.
It sounds like I might be put out with God, but I'm not really. I'm more put out with myself on that record.
I mean, the way you sort of open it up, the opening lyric is,
"Here is my harvest of heartbreak. Here is my threshing of tears. I'd give you my dream, but I lost it down in the locust years."
I remember listening to that for the first time, like, just because the way the record starts just has this beautiful kind of openness to it. And then that lyric comes in, and I'm like, this just sets up the whole record. Really, as for me, an invitation to be honest about pain and struggles and brokenness. You know, here is my harvest of heartbreak. You know, like, this is what I've harvested out of heartbreak. It was such a beautiful entry into a story that you're carving through the record. What is it for you that you're hoping to communicate through this record? What specifically, like, which tracks just are you're the most proud of, and why is that? Like, what is it about those particular tracks that I guess communicates something?
That's a really good question. I mean, my ultimate aim is for folks to hear this and to really experience grace. I just want people to know that if you go through the worst, that it is, I find that there's so much self-hatred in the world. I find that there's all these people walking around who are doing well on the outside, but are very suspicious of the love of God in their lives or the grace of God in their lives. And there's all kinds of preaching out there that tells people, well, if you do this right, if you believe right, if you get your faith in order, then all of these good things will happen to you and your life will be filled with victory and air conditioning. And I think that there's just this is what I've come to. My distillation of life is that some suffering is absolutely earned. We make bad choices and those consequences follow us. And that's the stuff I can control. I can make amends. I can work at managing my behavior. I can be nice to my spouse. I can be nice to my kids. I can, you know, get a job if I need a job. You know, there's stuff that I can do to have a better life and manage. But then there's this other category of it's unearned suffering. And there's a lot of people that are absolutely ashamed of the unearned suffering that they've experienced in their life. And I want to communicate through an aesthetic that is gritty and dirty and earthy, because I see myself in that aesthetic. I see myself in that kind of life. And yet I feel the love of God penetrating my life all of the time. That's why I think it is such a waste of time to walk around with this pious religious attitude that doesn't serve anybody. It's not useful. It's not utilitarian in the slightest. It only shores us up in our insecurities. It never brings us to freedom. And so I just think that anytime you can find an artist who's singing your life, or some type of filmmaker who's expressing grace in some kind of way, where you see the struggles of your own family in this person's story. Like that's why I loved Minari so well. It's about a Korean family that starts a farm in Arkansas. And it's like, I'm not Korean, but I resonated with this family like you wouldn't believe. And by the end of it, my wife and I are just in tears, and we're feeling the love of God on our couch watching this film. And we're just looking at each other like, I want to watch that again. That's the type of work. That's why art is worthwhile. Art is like an icon. It's a gateway. It's a gateway drug, dare I say, into the love of God. It can be, of course, it can be used to other, you know, ends. But I think that that's the reason why I do what I do and take the risks that I take and write songs that talk about, you know, missing God because I'm too busy making my selections in the liquor aisle at the grocery store, or, you know, mentioning that people have sex, or, you know, saying,
you talk about you and your wife having sex. I was like, what? How dare you do that? That's great.
Yeah. Right. Uh-huh. Yeah. I've actually done that two albums in a row now. So I'm starting to develop a reputation, you know.
Yeah, but your wife's gonna have she's gonna pull you aside soon if she hasn't already. But that's what I love about your music. That's what I love about how I find myself sitting in the record is, you know, those risks you take in it. You know, you mentioned that this is the reason why you take risks. I mean, yeah, lyrics like you just said, I'm in the liquor aisle. I love that one. I'm like, that resonates. Stillborn baby to my shoulders, you know, from You Bring the Morning.
You bring the stillborn baby to my shoulder. You bring your sorrow to every fallen soldier. You bring your passion to the graves that we stand over. Young love that we lost will be found as we grow older.
Moments in the record, for me, they're uncomfortable to a degree, but they're also moments of relief. It's like, yes, it's like that resonates with me. And it resonates with me because I need to get more in touch with my humanity and actually, you know, find God in the grittiness of who I am and my own brokenness. So anyway, I just think that's great. But how, I'm sure the risks you take come with a cost, right? So yeah. Talk to me a little bit about, like, who's listening to your records, or maybe even a better question, like, who doesn't want to listen to your records? And how do you, are you just like one of those artists where you're like, yeah, who cares? Like, I don't, you know, whatever. People listen, they listen. If they don't, I don't, you know, haters can be haters. Or are you someone where it's like, no, this hurts. Like I've read some things, I've heard some things. You're like, people, you know what I mean? Like, what is that like for you? Because you're putting your art out there. This is personal. And you're not just putting art out there. You're putting very personal, raw, vulnerable art out there. And people then can take it and criticize it, you know, slander you, you know, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. What's that journey been like?
Well, fortunately, I'm fairly arrogant in that I know that my work is really good. So I actually don't, I'm not worried about the artistic critique that might come. Because
I need a bit more of that in my life. You need to pray for me.
Well, I mean, it can stand against it. Yeah. Like I mean, some people want to talk about the theological issues in my music. I mean, people want to do that all the time, but what I've realized is that most people who want to talk about that, they don't really have theological issues. They actually have, they have cultural aesthetic issues. They're more ruled by their subculture's aesthetic than they are actual, you know, theological issues.
Right. Yeah.
I think I knew this would be a slow build. It would be a slow burn. I know there's an audience out there for what I'm doing.
Yeah.
And it really is finding its way. I'm not, they're never going to play me on Christian radio. They're not going to play me on the encouraging hits station. and I'm okay with that. And I actually have friends that are, you know, making really good money on those stations right now. And I actually have a place in my heart for that, those stations, because I really do believe that those stations help people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I can't eat McDonald's every day, man. I've got to have some vegetables. I got to have some real food at some point. And that's how I feel about art too. I'll go watch a Fast and Furious movie occasionally because I want to see fast cars zooming down the street. But if that's all I'm consuming, it's just not going to be good for me. And I want to watch a Terrence Malick film, or I want to watch, you know, something of that ilk. And because it's good for me, it feels good. It feels good to my soul, you know? Yeah, so I don't really let myself get pushed around by the haters too often.
I remember one of the sort of seminal moments in my younger life was reading a book. I think it was kind of written in the late 80s or early 90s, but Francis Schaeffer wrote a book called Addicted to Mediocrity.
Yeah.
And this was like, you know, 30 years ago now, maybe more. And he was basically saying to the church, we're addicted to mediocrity. We've, you know, the McDonald's thing that you just spoken about, you know, we've gotten used to fast food type faith. And we're settling for mediocre art. And he was sort of really trying to light a fire in the church to regain its passion for art in all of its different art forms. And I think that's kind of what I see you doing in your music is just really trying to provide, like you say, it's not going to be for everybody's cup of tea. But it's causing people to stop and think. And I think that's what we need more than anything. And, you know, Kingfisher, one of the tracks that I think, you know, I was on a Zoom call with you a couple of weeks ago with a bunch of other people that listen to your music. And Kingfisher was like the one song everybody wanted to know about. It was the one song they wanted you to play. There's so much, because like, I think a lot of the songs do provide this moment of connection for heartbreak or vulnerability or brokenness, but then that song provides a poetic picture of what freedom looks like and the joy, yes. I think, of breaking into freedom. Yeah, yeah, tell me a little bit about that song. Yeah, what it means to you, kind of what you were thinking as you wrote it.
Well, I was thinking of my wife, Amy. She and I have, you know, to some degree or another, felt rather homeless over the last few years of our lives. And we'd just been talking about, well, we started dreaming again about all the things that we really love. Like, what are the things that we are, that are really important to us in life? And I just sat down one day. I was attempting to, at first, just write a little song to her or for her, but what it ended up being was so much more than that. It ended up being kind of this ode to this beautiful eschatological hope of, you know, like it's got multiple layers. It's got this eternal resurrection hope embedded in it, but it's still got this language where that's something that we experience now and in the here and now. And so
yeah.
some songs, man, if you're really good at what you're doing, you know all the tricks to use. Like, you can, you know all the levers to pull to make a song lift, right?
Yeah.
And then some songs surprise you. Some songs supersede your natural ability. And I felt like Kingfisher did that.
When I get where I'm going, I will lend a steady hand, build a little cabin, dig a river through the land. Does a pilgrim tremble when he finally finds a home? When the rock bestows the water and binds the broken bone.
Yeah, I think that track, but also a bunch of your other tracks. One of my favorite records of 2019 was Nick Cave's Ghosteen. Mm. I mean, that's an incredible record. And I just see so many connection points in your songwriting style, even like the way your vocals, because your vocals are quite different on Poet Priest than they are Absolutely. Cherry Blossom as well. And they do have that little bit more of a Nick Cavey kind of feel to me. And I think what drew me to Ghosteen was this sort of sense of, like, you know, you don't normally go to Nick Cave for hope. But there is great hope in that record. Like, that kind of translated also into your music. And I just think that Kingfisher song carries with it that beautiful sense of, like, not again, like, you know, I want to bungee jump out of this horrible brokenness and just suddenly sit on a fluffy cloud with Jesus. But it's like, I want to understand in this moment what liberation truly feels like. And I think that song, with the way you've written the lyrics and the way that some of those phrases come together, again, it brings expression to liberation, which I think is kind of profound.
We go out walking in the water where the silver swims, cicadas singing like somebody washed away their sins. I see a kingfisher ascending to his rightful throne, the meek inheriting a city they can call.
Final thing I really wanted to kind of just, you know, kind of wrestle with you a little bit around is kind of what you would be encouraging an artist, a Christian artist. Now, by that, I don't mean like necessarily creating Christian art, but somebody who is an artist of faith. What would you encourage them? There's quite a lot of creatives that listen to this podcast. A lot of the people I interview in this podcast are from a creative background. Yeah. So if there's like a young creative who carries a Christian faith, you know, in their person, who lives that faith, what kind of encouragement would you be bringing to them as they think about expressing art into the future of this world?
My favorite thing to say to creatives is this: the point of your anguish is the invitation by the Spirit into your real work. I used to think that I was crazy all the time because I hated worship music. I hated Christian music. I felt guilty. I felt like I was critical. I felt that I was just being a jerk all the time because I couldn't handle Christian music. And then I realized, oh, that's God calling me to challenge the status quo and to do something different, to do something else than what I'm seeing done. And I have this sneaking suspicion that a lot of people don't move out. They don't take the risks that they feel in their heart because they're afraid of challenging the norm. They're afraid of challenging what exists already. And I think that I would just want, you know, no matter what your discipline is, whether it's music or visual or, you know, this could be in anything. It could be entrepreneurial in business or, you know, but I have this thing inside of me that is so hungry to see more people swing for the fences and do something that, you know, I want to add that you don't become a great artist overnight. So if you feel something within you that may, and you take a step out, you may feel resistance on it, but it may not be because of the controversial nature of your work. It may just be because your work is yet developed. It still needs to be developed. Right. So I want to be careful to make sure that people know that these things take time. Yeah. We're planting vineyards. Good wine takes time to produce. And I think that that's what I'm doing. I think of myself as a vintner, and I think that some of my best vintages are still in front of me. And I've planted this orchard, but I still have to tend my vines. And then every season I have to take those grapes and crush them, bottle them, and then I need to stick them in their casks and then ultimately into the cellar where they will wait to see the light of day. And once that vintage comes forth, you know, it's hopefully a beautiful bouquet, a beautiful flavor. But that doesn't happen overnight.
Mate.
Yeah.
If you bring the new wine, I'll bring the drinking.
There you go.
There you go. Boom. Throw your lyric back at you. Hey, Andy, so grateful for you to take the time to be with the Broken Hallelujah in our community on this podcast, and particularly all the people out in Asia that may not know your music, but I hope off the back of this we'll check out your music. And that's how I'd love to finish. How can people stay in touch with you? What's the best way for them to discover more about you and your music?
Well, Instagram is at Andy Squires. Squires is a funny spelling. It's Squires, Andy Squires. And then obviously my website, andysquires.com. You can communicate with me on both of those platforms. So, and then obviously I'm on Spotify, Apple Music, all the streaming platforms. So
awesome. Andy, thanks again for being with us. I know it's getting a little bit late on your end in Charlotte, so thanks for taking the time. And we're really grateful for your music. Thanks for putting something out there that we from the faith community can really sink our teeth into. It means a lot to us.
Thank you so much for having me on.
That's my conversation with Andy. I hope that's been challenging for you. Do yourself a favor, jump on Spotify or Apple Music, wherever you get your music. and take a look at his records, have a full listen, go for a long walk and put his record on and just enjoy kind of the whole experience of the record. That's what I did when I first heard Poet Priest recently, and it was a pretty awesome experience. So just pray that that will be a blessing to you guys. Reach out to Andy, give him some love. I know it's not easy to be a musician, put your music out there. So if what he shared today has encouraged you, or if his music has blessed you, let him know. Drop him an Instagram message or something like that. I'm sure he'd appreciate it. Coming up in our next episode, I interview a lady by the name of Jody Clark. Jody's husband recently had a brain aneurysm and is currently in a coma in a hospital in Shanghai. Jody has an amazing story of God's faithfulness, the power of community, and I think you're going to really enjoy her conversation. So that's coming up at episode 12. But before we get there, let's finish this episode by listening to one of Andy's tracks. This is You Bring the Morning from his recent record, Poet Priest. Enjoy.
You bring the gladness, I'll bring the gleaming. You bring the glory, I'll bring the singing. You bring the table, I'll bring the feasting. Somewhere in the distance, I hear wedding bells ringing. Thinking, you bring the new wine, Lord, I'll bring the drinking. You bring your spirit, I'll bring my weeping. Oh, I have nothing else but the promises you're keeping. Shoulder, you bring your sorrow to every fallen soldier. You bring your passion to the graves that we stand over. Young love that we lost will be found as we grow older. You bring the mountain, so I have somewhere to wander. You bring the ocean, so I can walk on water. You bring the wilderness, where I can learn to hunger. Oh, I feel you like a phantom, but I can't explain your wonder. You bring the morning, I'm gonna praise you with every breath that I'm breathing. You bring the working day so a man can keep. cheap end.